Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF on 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse, the programming coordinator for CJSF. And before we get started, I want to acknowledge that this program and all of CJSF's in-house programming is produced on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, who have been here since time immemorial, gathering to tell stories and share songs and culture and ideas and thoughts and love and feelings and emotions and everything else, and that I am very grateful to be able to continue to do that in my own way here. Today is June 19th, Thursday morning, and Saturday is National Indigenous Peoples Day. This month, June, is also National Indigenous Peoples Month here in Canada, so-called Canada, what is now known as Canada. And so for today's episode, I am going to be featuring a bunch of stories I've worked on over the last eight months, that all feature stories about Indigenous people or that involve Indigenous peoples or cultures or traditions in one way or another. And we're going to start with an interview I did back last year with director Chris Auchter, who directed a film called The Stand, which chronicles Haida resistance to logging in the 1980s. And is a really great documentary. My conversation with Chris was really good. We spoke at that point because the film was returning to the VIF Center for some in-theater dates. But that film, The Stand, is now, as of today, June 19th, available to watch in full for free at the National Film Board of Canada website, nfb.ca. So I want to encourage you to go watch it, because it's really good. It's a really important topic. It's really illuminating, and I just really quite enjoyed it. And so enjoy my conversation with Chris, and then you can go to nfb.ca to watch the whole thing. Before we do that, though, as always, we're going to start with a little bit of music. This is The Hallucination, once known as A Tribe Called Red, featuring Brett the Hitman Hart. This is Sharpshooter.
Damien, there was a time when you were an ally, but now it seems like it was all a lie, because your words have become as twisted as your conspiracy. Your language blinds you, and we see this pain the contortion of the mind has caused you, because we see the truth under your words. We are sick of the false accusations and misinformation. We are hearing a lot of talk from the Ally Nation. And they want to know who we are. We are the Hallucination. We are the tribe that you cannot see.
Stay up.
cheaters. If you don't submit, you will break.
My name is Christopher Ochter. I'm a filmmaker, Haida filmmaker. My Haida name is Watsas Day from the Yakalanis clan from Dawdins on Haida Gwaii. Like I said, I'm a filmmaker. I make films. I love to tell stories, both in animation, documentary, and beyond, I guess.
Thank you. And you're here because your documentary film, The Stand, is returning to the VIF Center Friday, February 28th. And this documentary tells the story of Haida resistance to logging on their traditional territories and the long, drawn-out process of that resistance and moving towards some sort of resolution. What drew you to this story?
Yeah, what drew me was my aunt and my uncle. They lived it. They were down there in Lyell Island fighting with the Haida. And yeah, I grew up and I knew they were down there. I was only 5 years old when it was happening, so I didn't remember anything that so I didn't know what happened down there, I guess what I'm trying to say. So that was the beginning of it, was me wanting to honor my aunt and my uncle in some way, Michael Nicol Yakalanis and Shelley Hegeman, and thinking this was a really important moment in our history and I should know it, and it would be great to know it. So that's where it started, and it was such a big pool to swim in because there was so much footage, which was great. Yeah, I had amassed like over 100 hours worth of video and audio. Some things, like I was also looking for what was happening before this all happened so I could have some understanding. So I was listening to interviews and different people talking from times before. And yeah, it was fascinating. It took up, yeah, it was 4 years to kind of get to this point, but I had a great team with me, really talented. And I think we brought together something, I think, special. And I think it's a unique experience, and it's not a film that I could just turn around and okay, I'm going to do another one just like that, because it was just such a unique opportunity to have this footage. A large amount of it was gathered from us, Susan Underwood and Donna Wilson. There were two filmmakers that lived here in the Lower Mainland, like around Vancouver, and they heard this was happening. The Haida were putting boots on the ground and on these logging roads, and they were like, this sounds important. We should get up there and see if we can film it. And the Haida let them in. They let them stay with them at the Haida camp. And I was told, because they were already thinking about the future, they were saying, we want people in the future to be able to see what it took and what we did down here, which I thought was so amazing, because, you know, the generation or so later, myself, that's what I was doing. And I needed this, like, mm-hmm. to be able to understand.
There's so many things there just to pull apart. One, the footage itself is really, really riveting and astounding to see, like you're saying, the level of access that was provided and how embedded the videographers were. You capture some really intimate moments, some moments of strategizing ahead of going out to the protests, all these things that, yeah, it would be hard to imagine how you would tell the story without some of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And to grab those nuances was just so important as well. And to be able to, because then the audience could start seeing inside and understanding the people that were there and kind of feeling for them, like we do as when we watch a film, we start feeling for the characters that are on the film. So it gave us a chance to understand them and to relate. And also it was so important for me to not insert myself in there. I kind of did with Mouse Woman a bit because I was thinking that the supernatural beings were there helping the Haida. And the supernatural beings are such a big part of our culture. And I think what the Haida were fighting for the survival of a culture. And it was important for me to let them tell their stories, the ones that were there and were captured on film, for them to explain why they're doing it now, why they're there, what it's all about. It came from the best possible sources. It came from the source. And they were just so well spoken as well, so articulate.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out to me from some of that behind-the-scenes planning footage is how aware of strategy and how aware of the process that they were going through. I'm not sure who says it, but at one point they say, we're in the theater business now.
Yeah.
And as you said, they knew that it was worth letting these videographers in to preserve it for the future. I was really impressed by the level of awareness of how to do what they were doing. Do you know where that comes from? Yeah.
Totally. No, you're making great points there. And that's one of my favorite lines of the whole film is, you know, we're in the theater business now. That came from Gujel or Gary Edenshaw, who had become, he became the president of the Haida Nation after Miles Richardson, who's in the film. So then it was Gujel, who was for many years. It was really well thought out in terms of we need the media to be here to spread the word so that it's covered on the news, so that we could start getting other people behind us. And it's not just the Haida, then they're expanding the group that's behind them to go, hey, and being able to talk to the politicians and put pressure on them to talk to the Haida even. That's really what the Haida were just, they wanted them to have a partner to talk to and go, we got to figure this out. So they knew that was important. And my uncle Mike, when I talked to him, he said, they could see when it was shifting, when people around BC or Canada were starting to get like kind of complacent about, oh, we've heard it, we saw it, and they start to on other issues. They would let there be a little bit of time, and then they would do something else that kind of caught people's eye and go, oh yeah, the Haida and what's going on down there. And even Jack Webster, like, he's amazing in the film in that it's so electric the way he just engages. And he's got this thunderous voice that just goes after people. And if they're going to survive, they got to go back after him in order to have their voices heard. But I think it's exciting to watch.
Yeah. Well, and it pulls something out, right? Like it pulls the responses
exactly
out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just going to say, like, I'm grateful that he covered it, and he covered it so expansively, even though, you know, he had his own stakes in terms of why he was doing it. But it was amazing, and I'm grateful that he covered it. Yeah, as I said.
Yeah, and that, I think that also it's emblematic of throughout this action, I guess, the political action, the protest, this recognition that the Haida were going to have to engage with the legal system. We're going to have to engage on the Canadian government or the British Columbian government's terms, even though to that point, any engagement on those governments' parts had seemingly been in bad faith or had not really worked out in the way that the Haida had hoped. And so there's this recognition and resiliency to be like, well, this is the way it has to be done, even though it has not worked so far.
Well, yeah, because there were talks before this, before they stood on the road, on the logging road. They thought they had a handshake agreement that the government wasn't going to extend the tree farm license in that area of Lyell Island and stuff because it had expired. And they said, nope, yeah, we're not going to greenlight and renew it. And then they flew home from Skidigit. And not much time had passed, and they renewed the license. And that, with the landslides, the Haida were like, okay, we got to get down there. It's getting crazy, and they're not listening. So they had to go, and almost because the governments weren't willing to talk and just hash it out, the legal system had to get involved, then the courts and stuff like that. And the courts were saying, like, this isn't a court matter, like, solve it politically. But then the government would appeal that decision and go back through the courts. So it just became locked in the courts. I'll just say this because I remember just earlier what we were talking about. Also, another great inspiration for the Haida, I asked my uncle, and he said it was Gandhi himself as well in terms of the root of nonviolence. So I thought that was pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, to be sort of sourcing global inspiration for this very, very local resistance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I guess I want to talk a little bit about the film itself. You said earlier that you were aware of this, you have family connections. In going through all the footage, did you learn anything? Like, were you surprised by the story that unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, I learned so much. And I mean, I was so intrigued with like we were talking about earlier, kind of those behind the scenes moments where they were practicing for what they think was going to be happening on the road. And they had Sven Robinson, who was an NDP MLA elected, there with them. Yeah. And who's also a lawyer. So he was able to say, well, this is, you know, how it's going to work and stuff like that. And kind of, you know, let them know so that that the Haida could practice it and kind of, you know, this is where we're going to stand. This is what we're going to do. But it, there again, it's just the way that they were talking. It just felt so rare to be able to peek in into those moments and go, oh, that was what it's like. And that's what's going through their minds. And yeah. So, I mean, like the whole thing I learned pretty much, right? Like the whole thing was a learning classroom for me because I just started out with the point that I knew my aunt and uncle were there. And then I don't know. I didn't even really know what the area looked like, right? Like, and what the Haida camp looked like and Frank Bevin's camp and stuff like that. So all these things were new for me. Because then when things interest me and kind of piqued me when I was first learning about it, they're those homing devices where you go, okay, let's red bold this. I think other people are going to be really interested and fascinated about this as well. But I mean, it was so fascinating. I remember trying to piece together because I was asking the questions too, like, why are the Haida doing this now? And like, why not earlier? Why now? What do the Haida want? What do we want? So it was so fascinating when we're sitting around the fire and listening to an elder, Ethel Jones, speak. And she says this, and it's in the film, you know, like, well, you know, we're here. We're not sure what's going on, but we're here. And then the way they talk too, and saying, you know, like, I think that's why we're here is it's, you know, it's about land claims. And, you know, I think that's the whole point and stuff like that. Like just the way that they're talking, it was just so reassuring too, to know that they're putting this all together too. And it's not a boom, we know everything all at once. And here it is, like it to know that it's organic and it's growing at the same time. That was really fascinating to me as well. And like I said, like with that going back to the rehearsal night, it was just so interesting to hear why they did the rattles the way they did and to have it explained by Gu Zhao, you know, why they had the paint and stuff like that, why they were wearing the paint. Like those things are fascinating to me. And they're expressed in such a human way in that it's not perfect and it's not super, like even though Gu Zhao, like he's a great speaker and stuff like this, but I wanted to show that he was searching inside of himself for that answer as well. And it wasn't just a ready, here's the script and the perfect words, like, you know, like,
right.
Yeah. That I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, well, and that even though, you know, as we were talking about earlier, there did seem to be strategy and planning and an awareness of what to do, they didn't necessarily, you know, consciously know all those things before starting, right? That those were sort of revealed to them through the process in a way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And we could do that in so many different ways. It's the same way with making a film. You don't know the whole thing going in. You're kind of slowly coming to you as well. So, yeah.
With the benefit of hindsight, I think you can look at this instance of resistance as maybe not a template, but as an example for future instances of Indigenous resistance and land defense, thinking about the Kanasatake resistance or the Wet'suwet'en. Does that resonate with you? Do you think that this inspired others?
I think it did. like, again, I spoke with my uncle Mike, and he said this sort of thing wasn't really done before. And like the RCMP, loggers, the government, the courts didn't know how to deal with this because they hadn't seen it before. It was all new, and there was no playbook on how to handle this situation. And I think it couldn't have been handled in terms of the RCMP's case in a better way. Like Inspector Harry Wallace and his team, like they were just had such a, they had just had so much respect, and the lines of communication were open. And I think, you know, the Haida were given respect, and they were getting it back as well, and even from the loggers as well. So I definitely think that we can all learn from this, which is why, you know, going back to that hidden story, like I don't think, even though this, I think this footage has been shown a little bit in quite a few different shorts, and there was also another documentary made in the year 2000 that had Susan Underwood as a part of the creation crew in this, but it was Ravens and Eagles, I think it was Atley Gwaii. But I don't think, like, in terms of like this film is in terms of showing, like, it's almost like we're witnessing and we're standing on the road with them, and we could see it unfolding before our eyes. And yeah, I don't think a lot of people have seen this before, and especially in this way. And I think it can be RCMP, people who are trying to stand up for a cause that they strongly believe needs to have change, and can look at this and go, oh, that's really fascinating. We could learn a lot from this. And because that's what we say about history all the time, right? Is please let's learn from it so we're not stumbling over the same stone time and time again. So, yeah.
For audiences who are interested to come see the film, what do you hope they take away from watching The Stand?
Well, I think definitely there's lots that we could pull in terms of that learning. I think there's a lot that we could take from seeing another culture and being able to relate to them and going, oh, they're like us. And, or, you know, I think there's that love and respect that comes. And I think that the film, I think, encapsulates the message in the song at the end that plays during the credits. So if you come and watch the film, like, I hope you'll, yeah, and enjoy that song. I think it's a powerful song. And I call it Ada's Message. And, yeah, she was an elder that was there, but I think that's what I'd like people to pull from it.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to sit down with me, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the film. So I heartily endorse going out to see it. That was my conversation with director Chris Auchter of the documentary The Stand, which you can now stream for free at nfb.ca, the National Film Board of Canada, now presenting that film, The Stand, for free. So go check it out. We'll be back right after this with more talking. But for now, some music.
This door, it's been dying for a long, long time. Fire consumes the atmosphere and the land. When the first hand touched the fruit, touch a serpent, the sky went dark, and the rains came down. Erasing your name, they're the first breath. Went crying out, pouring into the earth, and you could hear. eternal crust. That echoes like a bird and for what it's worth, we should build a monument into the sky, and we shall fly like a bird. Let's touch the star. This is who we are. Flesh and blood mixed with mud. Creatures bred like war. To bury your dead while the Pope sits on the throne upon dead bones. We're buried alive with empty hands begging for bread. The pillar of jealousy, there's no except idol worship. Let's build a ship, explore the stars. Let's have a drink, for the earth is dying. It's been dying since the birth of man. Flesh and blood mixed with mud. For the earth is done. The earth is done. It's been dying for years.